Hello and welcome back to Sports Report Podcast. This is episode 30. We've made it all the way to episode 30. Alejandro and Aiden aren't with me today. This is a solo podcast that we're rolling with right now. This is the first time we've recorded in over 3 months. I think since December 2nd, we're about 4 months. So we missed a ton. We missed the end of the NBA bubble. We missed the start of the NFL season. The NFL season has started and we're already into week 13. We'll talk a little about that today. COVID's still a thing. Who would think that we're still talking about that now, but it is a thing. But I'm here. Hopefully I can make that a little better for you, make your day go a little better through this podcast. And honestly, I'm happy to be back. We took a very long break, but hopefully the consistency starts hitting. We want to do week by week, and we're going to try to keep doing that. So let's just get straight into this. We're going to start out with some NFL. So this week, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, overall, this whole entire season, they've been struggling since they started off like pretty much 6-2, and they've just been struggling since then. After that, loss to the Patriots, and now they lost to the Titans. And now they're just having a real struggle going through right now. And that made it was made even worse when they got this COVID situation going. So the Ravens pretty much, they have up to, I believe, 20 cases or at least people on COVID IR. Last report I saw was 18. I believe they're into the 20s now. Lamar Jackson got COVID, so he's not going to be able to play in their game. And this whole situation by the NFL has been handled way out of whack. I mean, he got COVID and they're not going to have a quarterback. So pretty much like the Patriots had against the Chiefs when they had to bench Cam and start Brian Hoyer, the Ravens now are falling into that same exact situation. And honestly, they haven't practiced. I think they weren't eligible to practice until Monday. And so they're playing on Wednesday, which is today, the day of filming. This will probably come out after the game actually occurs, but I'm recording this prior. So just, you see where I'm coming from. Lamar out, they're going to have to start RG3 or Trace McSorley, who they just took off of COVID IR. He was there before that, but it's been such a long time since this whole entire thing started that he is now eligible and he's going to be the backup quarterback for the Ravens. Now, I'm interested to see RG3 here on this Wednesday game. Is this a 3:40? This is the weirdest scheduled game I've seen in my life. I mean, the COVID schedule is just destroying it. They started, this is going to be Thursday night football, Thanksgiving night, 8:20. And then they switched it to Sunday. That didn't work. And then they were going Tuesday, no, and then Monday. So Wednesday, sorry. That's where we're at now. This whole entire thing has been crazy. But RG3, interested to see him in there. They've only had one day of practice. I expect it to be a total just demolition. The Steelers are undefeated. So I just see the Ravens getting absolutely destroyed here. And I don't think this is a good thing really for them and their chances of making the playoffs. I believe they're out of the playoff picture right now. The AFC North is very hard for them. They're behind the Browns and the Steelers. The Browns have hung around. I mean, the Browns are a good team, but most of their games, they hang around. Like they played with against the Texans. I think they won like 10-3 or something. It was ridiculous, but they're playing down to their competition. Definitely. And the Ravens are too. I mean, they played down to the Pats pretty bad and lost that game, but the Browns are playing down to the competition, but they're winning the games at the same time. You know, Baker has his on and offs, and there's the games that you're like, well, okay, Baker, he's looking like his what he was projected to be out of college. And then there's other ones where he's just totally out of whack, just throwing picks every left and right. He's looking like Josh Rosen. But this Ravens team is very much in doubt, and especially with teams like, you know, the Raiders are falling back as well. But the Raiders, if they can hit the gas at the end of the season, finish this out, they could take them over, take a spot away from the Ravens, or maybe even the Patriots. They have some chance, but if they can somehow stumble their way into the playoffs, like they seem to be stumbling their way through tough games to wins, then maybe the Ravens will be out of this. And the Ravens, you know, Lamar in previous interviews came out and said that, you know, the defenses are calling their plays, they're being predictable, and they know what they're doing on offense. And I think that has a lot to do with offensive coordinator just not, I mean, their system is so simple. It's just, it's a college system. It is what it is. With Lamar, you don't have a ton of flexibility. As good of a player as he is, I want to clarify that. As good of a player as he is, I don't think Lamar is the greatest player ever and is like a, I don't think he's top five, in my opinion, as a quarterback. Because, I mean, he can't really go downfield with consistency. And the offense is so simplified to him that really they can't expand a lot. And, you know, with a top five quarterback, you'd want an offense that's flexible. That's one of the qualities that a top five quarterback should have, is that he can do a lot of things. It's flexible. You can change things up if a defense is figuring out and he can, you know, fit into that. But Lamar, you know, the Ravens go down by 10 points. He's forced to throw the ball, and it's not going to work. You know, against the Patriots, he had a good throwing game in the rain, which is impressive. But those are spotty here and there. There's a lot of games where, and even then, he still can't get the win and put up enough for that. But when the run stops with Lamar, he can't get the pass going most of the time. And that's really, really his problem. And, you know, it'd be not, I think Lamar has room to develop that pass, but I don't think it's ever going to really get to a certain point. You know, he's not great running quarterbacks that we've had in the past. He's not a Michael Vick when he passes. He's not Randall Cunningham when he passes. He's not even Kyler Murray when he passes. Kyler, to me, is probably the, like, if you look at any of the young quarterbacks in the league right now, you know, Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert are great players, but they're not as amazing scramblers. They can run. They can get around. They can get out of the pocket. But, I mean, Kyler is insane. He can throw in the pocket. He has great, great strength to throw downfield, as he saw in the Hail Mary with to DeAndre Hopkins, one of the greatest plays of the season. But I love Kyler. I think Kyler is the future prototype for a quarterback. He can run and he can throw. That's what you need. People are talking about Lamar, how he's like the future of quarterbacks and stuff like that, and that he's one of the like mobile quarterbacks, and that keeps being prominent. But what you need for a good quarterback in the future now is someone that can run and can pass. That's what people keep missing, is that Lamar can't really throw downfield. He checks to tight ends, and that's Mark Andrews. That's where he gets his stuff. And, you know, that's good. Him and Nick Boyle. And then he does those little slant routes and just 5 yards kind of outs and stuff, those type of things to his wide receivers. And, you know, that's fine and all when it works, but when you're down and you need a big play, he's not going to be there for you. Kyler, he's going to be there. He can get downfield. He can do whatever you want on the field. You can scheme things up all over the place. And Lamar needs to develop that a lot. You got Mahomes, he can run and can pass. You know, the quarterbacks and Deshaun Watson, the quarterbacks that are going to have the long-term success are those type of guys. Those young type of guys are going to have the success in this league. And, you know, Lamar early on, while defenses are still trying to figure out and coaches are still trying to figure him out, he'll have success, which he did. And now we're into that year three, and it's starting to unravel. And I wouldn't be surprised if it starts to go down even further. Now, you can use the weapons excuse, saying that, oh, you're comparing him to Kyler. Kyler has way more weapons. He has D-Hop. He has Christian Kirk, Larry Fitzgerald. He has good running backs out of the backfield and Kenyon Drake. But Lamar, I mean, he has Willie Snead. He has a Hollywood Brown, who in college was one of the best deep ball wide receivers for Kyler Murray, number one target over there. And, you know, Hollywood can get open downfield, definitely, and he does do that, but Lamar can't get it to him. That's his problem. And Lamar has great tight ends as well. and way better tight ends than Kyler would have. And, you know, Mahomes, obviously. Well, Mahomes, I don't think anybody can say that he is the best player in the league and will agree here. He is the best player in the league right now, and he has the most weapons. Well, Brady maybe has the most weapons. They just don't work out well. But Mahomes definitely has top-tier weapons out there. Like, that offense is completely insane. Yeah, but anyways, I just don't think the weapons thing would work, because I think you put Lamar into Kyler's offense and you tell him to run that, he's not going to run that at all. He can't run a Cliff Kingsbury offense, and that's a college coach. I don't think he could run that at all. An air raid is not that type of stuff. You know, at Louisville, he did run a lot more downfield type things, but that's college ball, and he tries to run in the NFL. It doesn't work. Arm strength isn't there. But that's the Ravens situation. I went on kind of a tangent there about Lamar. Just wanted to get that out. But, yeah, I don't think this is going to go well for the Ravens. Even when Lamar does come back, I just don't see it. And I'm leaning towards the Ravens possibly missing the playoffs. It just doesn't seem like it's going to work. Today, I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to handle this pretty well. And, you know, they're a team where they're undefeated, yes. I don't think they're that good of like an undefeated team. Coming into the season, I'll give the Steelers a ton of credit. Coming into the season, I thought the Steelers were going to be one of the lower tier teams in the AFC North and not making the playoffs, kind of like they did last year with Roethlisberger out. I just didn't see – I thought Roethlisberger after that injury, done. Because previous to that, I saw some interception flaws and he was just throwing it all over the place. You know, he had a lot of passing yards, but the interceptions were on me. That's why I'm kind of against Phillip Rivers type of guys and Roethlisberger and stuff. But he's cut down on that this year. Actually, people have thrown him into the MVP conversation. I wouldn't say that just because his yardage has been low in a few games. But he's definitely getting the job done, and that's what matters, obviously. But I don't see the Steelers really being, like, in the Super Bowl. They could definitely do it. I don't put it past them. But I don't know. Since the start of the season, and even through their wins, I just haven't been convinced totally, you know. But their wide receivers are very nice. Deontay Johnson, they've been using him very well on and off. Chase Claypool, great new addition, one of the best wide receivers in that draft. Juju, you know, I've always had my doubts about Juju. I thought that without AB, he wasn't going to do that well, which is true. He didn't do amazing without AB. But now Roethlisberger comes back, and you see that maybe he is – that type of wide receiver. He's not the best ever, but, I mean, he definitely can get the job done. So the Steelers definitely could shake some things up if they turn it up another gear. But they just need to keep going where they're going, keep that winning attitude, and maybe they can go far. I don't see them necessarily as the AFC favorite. The AFC is very blurry right now for me. Both sides, honestly, you know, the Packers possibly in the NFC, you know, the Titans could be a surprise in the AFC possibly. You got the Steelers. There's a lot of new faces, a lot of new faces. Chiefs obviously would probably be the favorite right now. I like what they're doing a lot. Chiefs definitely did very, very, very nicely. And we'll get on with that a little later, but let's cut to some of the Thursday night football games for Thanksgiving. I just want to cut back to those a little bit. So the Cowboys, we got to talk about the Cowboys and their utter failures in just this season. You know, Dak went down earlier this season, which is tough for them, but even so, you're playing in the NFC East, the worst division in football and possibly the worst division that I've seen in a very, very, very long time. It's possible someone with 6 wins probably wins this division. They're starting to pick it up a little bit, but it's very ugly. If you actually look on Twitter or something, or any social media, and you look up the Cowboys and things, you can find posts, and it shows the draft positions of the NFC East, and if someone's in the lead, how they lose like 10 slots. It's insane, absolutely insane. Just if I was a coach of one of these teams, well, not a coach because they want to win anyways, But a GM of this one of these teams, I'd be so in flux of like what I want to do. I'd be so confused. So confused at what I want to do. But the Cowboys lost 41-16 against the Washington football team, the WFT, led by Alex Smith and Terry McLaurin, Antonio Gibson out of the backfield. Very nice young core over there, besides for Alex Smith, but he's getting them through right now. Obviously, inspirational story there. But Cowboys, I think we have to say it. The Cowboys suck. They're bad. They just suck. If you're a Cowboys fan, I think you have to admit that as well. The Cowboys, they suck. Lost 41-16. Earlier in the game, it was a little bit close, but it just got away with them. Antonio Gibson had a big game, two touchdowns, I believe. Terry McLaurin just dominating. Alex Smith pretty much targeting him. Terry McLaurin carried that whole entire offense through the receiving game, just for wide receivers and tight ends alike. But the Cowboys, they had Dalton out there who's been serviceable, not amazing. You would think with the weapons that the Cowboys have in Gallup, Amari Cooper, Tony Pollard out of the backfield, Zeke out of the backfield, you got CeeDee Lamb, who's one of the best young wide receivers coming out of this year's draft and has performed very nicely. You'd think that maybe, like with any quarterback, you'd be able to do something with this team. But Mike McCarthy has somehow figured out a way to screw that up. He somehow figured out a way to screw that up. And obviously, in the first season, we can see Mike McCarthy is a horrible hire for the Cowboys. Just absolutely horrible, horrible hire. And you see Green Bay after they hired Matt LaFleur moving on from McCarthy, how they just skyrocketed up because they had that kind of in the middle of Rodgers' career, just mid 2010s. They were competitive, but they had some of those down years where it was just kind of average, just kind of average. And with Mike McCarthy, which led to his ultimately being fired. And you can just see that. Oh, ever since the players took McCarthy to that Super Bowl back in 2010. And Rodgers just carrying that team with a good core, obviously. But carrying, I should say, not carrying the team, carrying his coach. Because McCarthy is a fool. He's a fool at this point to me. I mean, how, and that defense, it looked nice at the start of the season, and then it just turns out to be absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible. And you can blame this a lot on the offensive line, which is pretty banged up, but even still, you should be doing something there in that division with the roster. Because the Cowboys, every year, they look great on paper, and then they suck. They absolutely suck. Jason Garrett couldn't figure it out, and Mike McCarthy seems like he's made it even worse. They hired him to be that experienced coach. Oh, he won a Super Bowl with the Packers, and he was good there for a few years, and we have a lot of confidence in him, but no, he's a clown. Lincoln Riley probably would have been a better place to go here. I mean, go to the college ranks and get someone. Go to college ranks and get someone. I mean, right now you could totally go out and get like Joe Brady from the Panthers, who's their OC, who's been done pretty good. It's been a struggling Panthers team, but they hung around with some good teams, including the Buccaneers. You can go out and get the Chiefs OC if you want him. I mean, he's talked about every week, so you can go get him. Can go get a lot of guys, but you definitely need some help on that team. You definitely need some help on that team. And I also want to talk here just about how bad the Cowboys suck. Ezekiel Elliott. Now, Ezekiel Elliott in this game against the Washington football team had 10 carries for 32 yards and also had a fumble, which has been a struggle of him, his this year. Zeke, this has been a question of mine for a while because Zeke's always had that a very nice offensive line in front of them. And in college, he was great, and he did have a great offensive line there as well. But you know, not to the level of the Cowboys, obviously. But so in college, he played really, really very, very well. But in the NFL, he starts to play very well as well. But you look at that offensive line, it had Travis Frederick, Lael Collins, Zach Martin, all those type of guys, Tyron Smith. There was never really a hole in that offensive line for Zeke. I mean, like, in a bad way. There was a lot of gaping. There was a gaping hole for him to run through every single time with that offensive line. But with this offensive line, which is injury riddled, Travis Frederick retired. He was the guy in the middle, the center, opening up those inside runs. And now you watch Ezekiel Elliott try to run with that line, and it's just horrific. He gets blown up at the seams, like trying to go through the middle. He gets blown up every single time, just trying to go through the middle of the offensive line. No gains. It's just bad runs. And it kind of gives me the feeling to confirm my maybe previous suspicions that Zeke isn't the best running back of all time. Not the best. He's not the best right now. Definitely not. Just the offensive line probably was his biggest strength at this point. Zeke just, it could be a struggle year. I don't know. But I think a lot of his success just came from his offensive line, which happens to a lot of running backs, but you see a lot of running backs shining through that. And when you're picked in the top five, you want a running back that can play really well with a bad offensive line. Example, Saquon Barkley. Now, he's getting injured a lot because of his offensive line, but he runs really, really well and has good games and can carry his team with one of the worst offensive lines in the whole entire league. I mean, Andrew Thomas, who they drafted number four overall this year, just hasn't played well at all, and he's the number four overall pick. Nate Solder used to play well on the Patriots, then absolute dumpster fire with the Giants. Kind of average now, but he was a dumpster fire when they signed him. And I mean, Saquon runs really well with them, and he was a Pro Bowl-type talent with that horrible offensive line. If you put Ezekiel Elliott back there, I think you're getting maybe even worse production than he has this season. And right now, it looks like Tony Pollard might even be the better option. I mean, Pollard just seems more explosive with his runs. He's accelerating better, cutting better. Zeke just seems like he's just running into the defender every single time, and you pick up maybe 2 yards and just keeps going that. But Pollard gives you that kind of explosiveness. So I don't really see Zeke anymore as that type of guy for the Cowboys, and I just don't see it. I don't see it anymore. Guys like Christian McCaffrey, the Panthers offensive line is all right, but it's not amazing. Still runs amazingly behind that line. This Zeke just can't do it anymore. It just doesn't seem like he can anymore. Now, going to more of these Thanksgiving games, the Texans followed up their win against the Patriots and beat the Lions in convincing fashion. Now, the aftermath of that, they lost some wide receivers. The Texans cut wide receiver Kenny Stills. It was a mutual agreement. Stills wanted to get out of there and go to a contending team. So I guess Stills doesn't believe in their playoff hopes that they're trying to carve out there with Deshaun absolutely carrying that offense. And, you know, you see Bill O'Brien get out of that, and everybody's just kind of like, oh, we can maybe actually win some football games now with Crennel under with the head coach in job, which he's not going to get full time. But anyways, they got more inspired, definitely. And they need to, because the Texans pick is the Dolphins. So it makes no sense to tank this season unless you really value getting a high second round pick. Anyways, the Texans cut Kenny Stills. It's going to be interesting to see where he goes. Maybe, you know, the Packers need some help. Although, you know, Lazard and St. Brown and Valdes-Scantling, despite Valdes-Scantling's fumble in one of those games, they've been decent supporting cast, but definitely option there. You know, Patriots are always in on everybody according to the internet, so if you want that. As a Patriots fan, I definitely wouldn't mind it. I mean, right now, Cam can't necessarily throw very well anyways, but he only does have Damier Bird and Jacoby Myers is basically the only wide receivers that he throws to. And then you got a return specialist in Gunnar Olszewski, and that's about it. If they give Dante Moncrief a chance, I'd be very happy with that. But so far, he's just set right on the bench. So Stills would definitely be helpful there. Will Fuller, he got suspended 6 games for a prohibited medication. He put this out in an Instagram post yesterday. And, you know, it's disappointing for him. Obviously, he was healthy this year, was having a very, very nice season. Bradley Roby, also of the Texans, was suspended for 6 games for the exactly same thing. So, a little suspect there. I don't think this was really anything that bad. It could be. I'm not sure, but Fuller definitely was having a good season. He was staying healthier just because he's had so much injuries and stuff. That's why I think that maybe this was kind of a legit thing. He seemed sincere in his post, so I don't think this was a just kind of steroid me up type thing. I think this was more of, you know, getting injured all this time and the doctor actually gave him something that he thought was legal and would help him out. Kind of like Edelman when he got the steroid suspension last year, I believe. Edelman, I totally believe that Edelman was sincere with his because he just came off a big injury. And I think that he was sincere just because when you come off a huge injury or you're battling with injuries all the time, usually some of the substances will help you out. So I do think Fuller will be sincere, is sincere. I just think that in my mind, and I hope that he, I hope he does well out there. I hope this doesn't hurt him that much. And, you know, it's disappointing to see because Fuller was having a really, really good season in place, really, as the number one wide receiver instead of DeAndre Hopkins. And he was outshining guys like Brandon Cooks, who is a pretty good wide receiver out there as well. So that was really nice to see. Also, as a result from that game, the Lions decided to fire head coach Matt Patricia. About time. They also fired GM Bob Quinn. Now, Patricia has a 13-29-1 career record with the Lions over about 3 seasons. Never really a good hire in the first place. As we know, he got hired after Patricia gave up all those points to the Eagles. You know, he's a defensive coordinator originally and wasn't really that great of a defensive coordinator in New England with some good players back there, just couldn't figure it out at all. And then he goes to the Lions. Bob Quinn also. Just personnel decisions haven't been amazing. That Justin Coleman signing that we talked about a long way, like episodes ago, really was a big overpay. That was one of the most questionable moves I ever saw. But yeah, they haven't done amazing. I think it's about time for a new regime. Definitely people in Detroit thought that this was a good firing. I 100% agree. As a Patriots fan, even, you know, we don't think he's that great. We don't want him really back on the staff either. If he decides to come back, we'd rather keep what we have going. So it's going to be interesting to see where he goes, where the Lions go from here. But there's a lot of spots opening up for head coaching jobs starting to go here with the Texans and the Lions both looking. Interesting that the Texans actually helped another team get rid of maybe a coach that kind of sucks of the Belichick line, which hasn't had much success besides for like Brian Flores as of right now. So that is the end of the part one of the podcast. We're going to take a quick break. And we will be back with part two with some more NFL stuff. And we're back with some more NFL stuff. All right, so since we just covered the Thanksgiving stuff, we're going to cover some Sunday games from the past week. So the Broncos QB situation was a big thing that started to happen over the last week. So Drew Lock, Blake Bortles, they and the other quarterbacks on the Broncos pretty much met without any mask on for a couple hours, and that was not making the NFL happy at all. And they were all put on the COVID IR list. And the Broncos now only a few days away from their Sunday game against the Saints had no quarterbacks eligible to play in that game. So they definitely didn't get as much help from the NFL as the Ravens necessarily did. So the Broncos had to play with their practice squad wide receiver Kendall Hinton at quarterback. He was a wide receiver, undrafted free agent wide receiver out of Wake Forest. This was his first career NFL game. The last time he played any snaps at quarterback was his junior year of college. So he has some experience, but wasn't necessarily a great player at that position. You know, entering the NFL as a wide receiver and playing wide receiver his last year of college. But the Broncos, knowing this and knowing that they didn't want to take someone who took absolutely no snaps at a quarterback prior to this for the Broncos and had no readiness to play this, they instead wanted to start their offensive quality control coach. His name is Calabres. So Calabres, this is from an ESPN article. Denver felt that Calabres had the strongest command of its offense and he could run the system better than anybody. Now, this guy is a former University of Central Florida quarterback. So he does have some experience at quarterback. He's not any fat coach that doesn't have any experience in football. I mean, he actually played. So it makes sense. It would have been interesting to see. He would definitely understand the quarterback position a little more than Kendall Hinton for the Broncos. This obviously didn't fall through. Hinton ended up playing. But the league denied those requests that were made by the Broncos on Saturday, a day before the game, to start Calabres. The Broncos couldn't activate the coach to the active roster. And the reason for this is the league doesn't want coaching staffs being storage areas for potential players. So which is actually kind of smart. They don't want any franchises storing away potential players on their coaching staffs, which is an interesting little concept. So they started Hinton as a quarterback at Wake Forest. He completed 133 passes of 253 for 1,504 yards, 8 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions for the Demon Deacons. Now, Goodell denied the requests of having Calabres in at quarterback. Hinton started, and it didn't go well for him. The Saints won the game 31-3. Hinton was 1-for-9 with 13 yards. It was a screen pass, no Fant. He also had 2 interceptions, one going to Janoris Jenkins and one to Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Now, on the other side of the ball, it wasn't too pretty either. Taysom Hill went 9-for-16, 78 yards and an interception. Now, with all the people criticizing Hinton, again, this is his first NFL game. He just came off the practice squad and not playing quarterback since junior year, has to go play quarterback in the NFL against the Saints, which are not a bad defense. They're a good defense. Good players back there. So obviously tough situation there for Hinton. I would not throw any blame at him at all. I mean, you have to – the Broncos' Twitter account put out a post saying that, I mean, you just have to applaud the guy. Even though a horrible performance by him, you can't really criticize it. I mean, he went out there and tried his best for what he was given, and he wasn't given a hell of a lot. So overall, can't criticize him. But who can we criticize? Taysom Hill. We can definitely criticize Taysom Hill. Now, Taysom on the ground was good. Two touchdowns. But passing, 9 for 16, 78 yards, and an interception. Now, Taysom hasn't put up amazing passing numbers. But, you know, in the first half of this game was not looking too well, and even in the first quarter, Taysom and Kendall Hinton's numbers basically looked similar, which is a bit concerning, seeming as that you've been trying to play, you gave this guy a nice contract, and you've been trying to play up this guy as the future of the franchise. If I were a Saints fan, I would not want this guy as my starting quarterback. You're going to fall into the same trap as Lamar Jackson, just older and worse, way worse at running the ball. Now, you know, I think I don't understand why they don't just give the keys to Winston. The problem with Winston definitely could have been the offensive scheme Arians was running, because as we know, first year, well, any just quarterbacks in general under Arians, lots very heavy on interceptions, very, very heavy on interceptions, and a lot of pressure because you're putting them back to throw all the time. With the Saints offense, it works with a Drew Brees type of guy who isn't going downfield as much anymore, and he still puts up nice numbers. If you could coach Winston to maybe be a little more conservative with the ball, he could definitely be a nice little quarterback for you, and he could probably put up a lot more production than Taysom Hill could through the air. And just overall, I think Winston probably should be given a shot here, and that's why I just don't understand it with the Saints. If I were a Saints fan, I would not want Taysom Hill as my starting quarterback. I mean, they're getting through these games with him as the backup, which is good. But next year, if Taysom is a starting quarterback after Breeze goes, then, I mean, I just don't see it. And if I was a Saints fan, I don't – you guys, if you're a Saints fan, tell me. But, I mean, I don't think that it would be a good call. I just don't see him as the future at all. You know, he's a good gadget player, and he can definitely make his money through that, and he has. But as the backup QB, it could work, but starter, no. I don't see it. The Chiefs also, in the afternoon, won 27-24 over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Buccaneers, as of late, not looking amazing. They haven't looked great. Brady in prime time, also a little shaky. But Mahomes had 462 yards and three touchdowns. He was going crazy. People thought he might get over 500. Didn't get there, but slowed down in the second half. Tyreek Hill had an insane game. 13 receptions for 269 yards and three touchdowns. Brady had an all right game. 345 yards and three touchdowns, which looks good on paper. He also had two interceptions, but looked very shaky throughout that whole game. As Arians just keeps trying to force Brady into that offense that he put Jameis in. And, you know, that you saw how that works out for Jameis, and it's working out a little better for Brady. But Brady and Arians, they're going at each other right now. Arians, there's reports that he's unhappy with Brady. There's heavy tension. And out of both of those guys going, I think it would probably be Arians. I think Brady has control of this team now. This might backfire on Arians getting him in there. And, you know, he let him have Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown hasn't done a lot. He doesn't look like he's that type of he's a good player still, but he doesn't look that like the type of Pro Bowl, All-Pro type of guy that he was anymore. And I don't think a lot of people expected him to be that All-Pro guy, especially with this loaded offense. But at least, like, a nice wide receiver, which he's been average, nothing more than that. And, you know, Brady's been given all these weapons, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, Rob Gronkowski. But this all goes back to what I've been saying at the start of the year. Brady is older. And when you have a 43-year-old quarterback, even though he's performed this season, and I'm not docking him for this. I mean, his season for his age has been amazing. It's been a great season. For what Brady's doing at his age is crazy. But the system that Arians is putting Brady in is setting him up to fail. And I know that sounds crazy with all the weapons Brady has, but it's not about the weapons, it's about the system. The system has Brady throwing for a crazy amount. just an overall crazy amount for his age. He threw 41 times, which isn't that bad. He's had some games that's been more, but, you know, with Belichick, he'd have games where, you know, maybe he's throwing in the high 20s. Maybe he's throwing low 30s. That's kind of his average type thing. And it was more checkdowns to James White, and then slants over the middle to Edelman, little routes, and you're setting the wide receiver up so they can run for an extra five and get a first down. It was kind of a chip downfield. With Arians, it's you throw the ball downfield all the time. You sit in the pocket for a long time. And you get hit. With Brady, with what he's used to be doing, he's used to getting the ball out really fast, just quick routes. But he has to sit back into the pocket for a very long time in Tampa, and it doesn't seem like he's very comfortable doing that. And obviously at 43, his arm strength for a 43-year-old is very nice, but it's declining. And if you put that much on a 43-year-old quarterback, even if it is the best quarterback of all time, he's going to have certain struggles and their team is going to struggle. It's just the system's not right for him. And if Brady was younger right now, I'd say, yeah, Brady could probably run this. I mean, that 50 touchdown season back in 2007, he could run that type of stuff. He could throw for forever and for very long distances. I mean, the dude was insane back then. He was basically performing like Patrick Mahomes is now, and he could do any of that type of stuff. But towards the back half of the 2010s decade, back in like 2018, 2019, you saw him. He's more of a check down type of guy now, and he has his mind do the talking and his decisions that get him wins. But with Arians, he's trying to force more of the physical things. And that just doesn't really work with Brady anymore because he's 43. And that's the problem that I brought up at the start of the season. It's the problem I still think is happening. And I think I was frankly right about it. And it's a shame that with like such a great team that they're falling apart like this. And also, I think the relaxed attitude, really, that Brady had coming in to Tampa Bay, that it's like, oh, it's Tampa Bay, it's nice down here, it's Florida, we can kind of relax. And Arians kind of more of a relaxed type of coach than Belichick is, and having it not more as a work atmosphere but kind of this fun time really is not helping them at all. And I think you see Brady frustrated so much. And I don't think he was expecting that down there. But I, as a Patriots fan, I've seen Brady frustrated definitely with the Patriots, but not as much as the Buccaneers. And they're broadcast nationally up here, like all the time. So I watch a lot of these Bucs games, and he's frustrated so, so much. He's yelling all the time. And I just don't think that he really is fitting there. he's not fitting there. And the age is definitely a factor. The system's a factor. And, you know, maybe if Arians goes and he stays another year, gets another coach that lets him do what he wants to do, then I think, and, you know, knows his limits, then I think Brady might do a little bit better than he is right now. But then you're going into the 44-year-old territory, and who knows, with when you're going this late in your career, year to year, off season, drastic things can change. So it'll be interesting to see that. And also Antonio Brown coming back after the season, who knows, Gronk, all that type of stuff. So this year was kind of the either win or you don't make or break year for Brady and the Bucs in his first one. And as of right now, I think it's a first round exit. I think they're playing down to certain teams, kind of like the Panthers they had some struggles with. And, you know, it's a tough division. The Saints seem like they got control and they got their numbers. So if you're going to bump it to the Saints in the playoffs, it's all over really for them. And with those weapons, it's a shame, but it looks like that's where it's headed. The Patriots also won this week. Belichick scoring a win for him and Brady a loss in that kind of debate. Patriots won 20-17. Kyler Murray had 170 yards and an interception. Patriots defense played very well. Had a locked them down, honestly, with Kyler, who's been kind of gaining steam in that MVP race. That shut him down very badly for that. And Cam Newton, 84 yards passing and two interceptions. Patriots still win with that. It's very weird how they do that. And the Patriots just limp through games and find their way to a win. It's very inconsistent. But whenever they play someone who's a good team, like the Ravens game, they just seem to come out with a win. It's very interesting. Newton as a quarterback next year, I wouldn't want him back. But he definitely – he brings something. It doesn't show up on the – on with the statistics, but he brings that attitude that I think gives the team I don't know. It just – it moves the team. I really think it does, and you see it on the field. But the throws for him have been very ugly. Bad to watch. Bad to watch throws. So hopefully he can start figuring that out. If he could figure that out and maybe have the passing like he did against the Texans, then, you know, this team could go far. Also, I don't know if any of you guys saw the Gunnar Olszewski return, but Anfernee Jennings was called for, I think it was a block in the, no, it was a blindside block. Blindside block. And I guess by the book, this was a blindside block, but I mean, it was very clear, very, very clear. It was not blindside at all. It screwed up a Gunnar Olszewski return touchdown, which was pretty much the first time Gunnar's ever done anything in his whole entire career. So it was very exciting as a Patriots fan to see that, but see it called back was horrible. I mean, Anfernee Jennings, rookie linebacker at Alabama, huge hit. He's been performing nice this season. He's been a good little addition. The guy coming in to try to get Gunner, he would have got him if he wasn't blocked in the way that he was. He lowered his shoulder, and knowing Anfernee was coming in to block him, he was literally looking him straight in the face. Anfernee knocked him down. It's called a blindside. I thought that was total bull. I don't know about you guys listening, but I thought that was total bull call. But that's just me, and Patriots got the win anyway, so it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. But if they didn't, then you'd see a lot of angry Patriots fans, including me. So on Monday Night Football, the Seahawks won 23-17 over the Eagles. Wasn't that close. Eagles threw a Hail Mary, then got an extra touchdown. It didn't matter. Wentz went 215 for two touchdowns and an interception. The interception was absolutely horrible, basically threw to the defender. Wilson, 230 and a touchdown. Also, you know, Carson Wentz isn't really the guy anymore. Just not a guy that – he's not – after the injury and after the Foles thing happened where they went to the Super Bowl and won and everything, hasn't been the same player. And even last season, he did better than he did – he's doing this season. But this season, horrible. I believe he's leading the league in interceptions. And honestly, hasn't done anything good. And, you know, at this point, Eagles fans and everybody really kind of want Hurts in there just to see what he got, because you might be going for a quarterback in the next draft, especially with your with the situation in the NFC East. If you lose, if you don't get the first spot in the NFC East, you're going to get a high draft pick. So you can definitely possibly pull one of those really good quarterbacks. And they have a couple good quarterbacks in that draft with Fields and Lance. And you got Trevor Lawrence and you got Zach Wilson and guys like that. Top of the draft, you're going to have to be to get those type of guys. And I definitely think that could be there. But if Hurts, if you don't get to look at Hurts, and you're forced into that decision, then Hurts basically, the pick is basically the Hurts pick is basically worthless. It's basically worthless at that point. So you need to see what you got with Jalen Hurts. Because if Wentz is going to continue being like this, it's just better to let him go at this point. And he'll get a job somewhere else, possibly the Bears. They're struggling. Maybe somewhere over there. He'll get a job, and we'll see if this is permanent or not. But as of right now, Wentz can't throw to anyone. He's just not the same quarterback anymore. And maybe it's something mental. It could be the weapons. I don't think it's the weapons at this point, though, because the weapons aren't going to make that horrible interception throw. You can't blame that on them. Most of the interceptions you can blame on Wentz. So I think this is mostly Wentz, despite the injuries. And, I mean, they've been saying the injuries for a long time, Eagles fans, but even at this point, I don't think you can say that. So they started to bench Travis Fulgham because Alshon Jeffrey came back, gave him a reduced role. Fulgham was doing very well, but this game, 2 receptions, 16 yards. Alshon, who had more snaps than him, had 2 receptions for 15 yards. So probably the washed-up Alshon Jeffrey, you should maybe give a few more snaps to the younger guy who's performing well and giving your team a little bit of hope. Maybe perform him and put him in. Jalen Reagor, who, as we know, I'm not the biggest fan of coming out of college, had 3 receptions for 11 yards. Not amazing. And then, even so, probably should get a few more snaps than Alshon Jeffrey, just because at this point it's developing players and the older guys more should be the ones helping them out, because you're not getting anywhere with this. On the other side of the ball, polar opposite, DK Metcalf, 10 receptions for 177 yards. One of the best receivers in football, and definitely should have not went 64th, I believe, is where he went in the draft. Definitely shouldn't have gone that far back. Maybe not even the best wide receiver in that draft. It's still debatable. I mean, the wide receivers in that draft are crazy good, and the Patriots still drafted N'Keal Harry at 32. Yeah, 32. So, yeah, not a happy draft for me. So that's going to be that. But we're going to start with our NFL Week 13 preview. So I'm just going to go through these games here. I'm going to tell you who I'm going to win, kind of like a college game day type thing. This is just a new segment I wanted to try out. So Saints at the Falcons. This one is interesting. So the Saints are going to be starting Taysom Hill. They had a 31-3 win last week, but the Falcons absolutely blew out the Raiders last week and looked really good, and that was without Julio Jones after the Raiders played a really tight game with the Chiefs. So I think the Falcons are going to keep this one rolling. I give this one a win to the Falcons. I just think Matt Ryan, Calvin Ridley, and those type of guys are going to have a good game against the Saints, and they're going to finish out this season with a mediocre record that screws their draft position. And I think that Taysom has to drop one of these games at some point. I think this is the one. Titans at Browns. I think this is kind of the game that wakes up the Browns. And maybe they perform a little bit well. I think they'll keep it tight early. But at the end of the game, I think Derrick Henry is going to put this one away like he put away the Ravens. I give this one to the Titans. Lions at the Bears. I'm going to give this one to... Well, this is a tough one. This one here is tough. I like Stafford. They just fired Matt Patricia, so I think they might be inspired to win a little bit more. So, but then again, you have the Bears defense. Always is a tough thing to play against. And Mitch Trubisky still didn't play amazing. I think I'm going to give this one to the Lions. Just an inspired team win. I think it's going to happen after Patricia got fired. Bengals at Dolphins. This one's easy for me. Dolphins, no matter who's starting, Tua or Ryan Fitzpatrick. Bengals aren't going to have it without Burrow. You know, prayers for him to come back from that injury. But really, the Ryan Finley or whoever they start, I think they have Jeff Driscoll maybe back there. I'm not sure. But nonetheless, I think this one's definitely a win for the Dolphins, especially at home for them. Vikings at Jaguars. Jaguars, Jake Luton. I see this one going to the Vikings. Pretty much self-explanatory there. Jaguars, dumpster fire. Colts at Texans. This one's tough. Colts didn't look amazing against Titans, but they still are a good team, and the Texans run has to stop at some point, and they lost Will Fuller and Bradley Roby already, and they cut Kenny Stills. So I think Deshaun's gonna keep it a little bit tight, but I don't think the offense is gonna be able to pull it out the end. I give this one to the Colts. Raiders at the Jets. Raiders just came off a really bad week. But the Jets are the Jets. They probably will go 0-16. Easy for me, Raiders. Giants at Seahawks. This one, it could be a trap game for the Seahawks, but I don't see it happening. Daniel Jones still don't have a lot of confidence in him. So I'm going to give this one to the Seahawks. Rams at Cardinals, one of the more tight games. The NFC West matchup, that's definitely important for that. Goff versus Murray. I think Murray's going to pick it up this time. I think this one's going to be a big shootout. Definitely Kupp and Woods getting involved a lot. Josh Reynolds, maybe. But I think I'm going to have to give this to the Cardinals in a close one. They'll rebound, keeping their playoff hopes alive. Patriots at Chargers. I see this one definitely as a tighter game. I think the Patriots defense is going to play the Chargers tight. And I think Belichick's definitely going to try to limit Herbert's production. Herbert will play well, but against Belichick, and the Chargers have not been able to finish out games late. So I think the Patriots stumble into another close win here against the Chargers, even with Austin Eckler back for the Chargers, who will make a difference in that game. Eagles at Packers. I see the Packers taking this one easy. The Eagles are down in the dumps right now, and I think Wentz will continue to struggle. And bold prediction, I think Wentz is pulled by the third quarter for Jalen Hurts in a blowout win for the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. And lastly, Broncos at Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are going to win this one, pretty obviously. I had a lot of confidence at the start of this year with the Broncos and Drew Lock, but it doesn't look like it's working out for them. Lock's been on and off, which has kind of been disappointing. I think he still will be a good quarterback in this league, but especially coming off of the COVID thing and all that, I don't see the Broncos winning this one. So I say the Chiefs take this one pretty handedly and safely. And that's going to be the end of those predictions. And we will be back after a quick break with the NBA and some MLB to wrap it up. And we'll see you then. And we're back with some NBA. So starting out with the NBA draft was a few weeks ago. And so let's just recap that. So Anthony Edwards, he went number one. There's some doubts there. I like Edwards' game, but there's some doubts there because he said, actually in a pre-draft interview, like draft day, I saw this, that he would, if he was drafted for football, he would much rather go play that. He doesn't really have a strong love for basketball, which a bit concerning. Personally, I would have went Wiseman, who went number two to the Warriors, as he's my number one prospect. I would have preferred him, but Edwards fits the better need for the Timberwolves, so probably actually I would have gone Edwards for the T-Wolves if I were them, since they already have Cat. But Wiseman is the best player in this draft for me, and I think the Warriors got really good with him there just because Wiseman can do so much. I mean, he's your interior type of guy. And we didn't see a lot of it in college, but definitely in high school saw him stretching the floor a lot. He's just a big that can put points in the bucket and obviously get some rebounds. He's a good, very nice player. LaMelo Ball went to the Hornets. I don't like LaMelo really at all. I think he's like his brother. He puts up a lot of points, but it's because he puts up a lot of shots. Percentages really aren't there for me, and I'm just not a big fan with him. If he can develop more of a consistent shot, then I think that this could work out. But I think this is just another Jordan pick that failed. Jordan, not a great owner, GM, great player, not a great owner or GM, really hasn't shown much potential there at all. Now, the pick that I think shocked a lot of people and screwed up a lot of people's mock drafts was the Patrick Williams to the Bulls pick. Patrick Williams, I had a problem with this big time. I think a lot of Bulls fans wanted Denny Avdija, the Israeli phenom out there. he was looking to be a very good player. He ended up elsewhere with the Wizards. And then a lot of people were expecting Obi Toppin, who went to the Knicks. Those guys went 8-9, I believe. But a lot of people were expecting one of those guys there at 4, and most likely I probably would have went Obi Toppin here. I mean, he's National Player of the Year. Very, very good. Good shooting percentages and everything. He can really just get it done. He has that kind of superstar label that I think you could write on him possibly in this NBA if he pans out. But Patrick Williams doesn't really have that. In college, wasn't even really kind of good enough to be that type of starter player. He was named the ACC Sixth Man of the Year in his only college season. Sixth Man of the Year. Not something you want in the first round of your, well, as the fourth overall pick when you have National Player of the Year standing there. And I know college is different than the NBA, but I mean, come on. I don't even think Williams, you know, he brings a good defensive presence. 9.2 a game, 4 rebounds a game. Stats don't pop off there, but, you know, he brings some good intangibles, good defensive mind, and good presence on the court. But number 4 overall pick material, he's just not. He's not going to make or break your team. He can definitely stick around there. But, I mean, he's like the Montrezl Harrell of the NCAA. He's their Sixth Man of the Year. And I just don't see Patrick Williams as that type of guy. I hope he proves me wrong, but as of right now, I think Patrick Williams isn't that good of a pick for the Bulls, and I'm very disappointed in them, especially when they already have Lauri Markkanen as a power forward. So, not the best move there for the Bulls. Also, free agency started. Gordon Hayward had an interesting situation as a Celtics fan. I was not happy with this. Hayward, he signed a 4-year max contract, which is insane, seeming as that he's been unproductive for pretty much 2 years ever since that injury with the Celtics. First 5 minutes on the floor, which was tragic. He hasn't performed very, very well for this Celtics team. And overall, just has been kind of that role player role, coming off the bench every now and then, and sometimes suiting up as a starter, but not having, he has flashes, but every now and then. So he goes to the Hornets for this huge deal, but, you know, put this agent in the Hall of Fame. Alejandro, he texted me. And he's not here right now, but I'm sure next week he'll tell you. I mean, insane deal, and he thinks the agent is the best agent in the world. And at doing that, I mean, you need to give that agent a raise, share some wealth, Gordon, with that agent. Yes, that agent's wow. So Hayward got that huge deal by the Hornets, but before that, there was a lot of rumors that he might go to Atlanta. That didn't pan out. They had a good free agency with Bogdanovich and Danilo Gallinari, but didn't end up going there. His first destination, according to reports, his first choice was Indiana, going back to where he grew up, and he wanted to go home and play for the Pacers. But to do this, you needed a sign and trade to get enough cap space for the Pacers to go and get him. So Hayward was working with Danny Ainge and everything to get this deal done. Obviously didn't pan out. Ainge, reportedly, the Pacers were offering Miles Turner, who would have been a great center for the Celtics, even if Ainge wasn't that interested in him. I think a lot of the fan base thought, and I think a lot of people that follow the NBA can, that they know that Miles Turner would have been an upgrade at center over Daniel Tice, and probably something that solved that center problem that Celtics have been having that's been preventing them from getting farther than the Eastern Conference Finals. And also an off-bench shooter, which they did solve possibly in Aaron Nesmith from the draft, but also gets a veteran presence in Doug McDermott. Now, Ainge declined this and instead was asking for Turner and possibly Victor Oladipo or TJ Warren, which is way too much for Gordon Hayward. I mean, that's just destroying their whole entire player base. I mean, TJ Warren in the bubble was very, very nice, and Victor Oladipo is a former All-Star. So way too much. Honestly, probably should have took the deal, but instead, Ainge ends up with a trade exception worth $27.9 million for Hayward, and he also gave up 2 second-round picks in that, which will be useful if the Celtics actually do want to pull a trade for a big-name player, which maybe they look to do with this. But Danny has not – everybody praises Danny Ainge, and I have praised Danny Ainge in the past, but as of right now, he has not been getting his job done very well. He just never seems to pull the trigger. And with the NBA is a superstar league, and you need superstars to win championships. You can't have – with guys like Marcus Smart, and I love Marcus Smart. I love to watch Marcus Smart. But the super teams win, and Marcus Smart is kind of that fundamental, fiery type of guy. He's not going to be pop off the stat sheet or anything, but he's there. And the only superstars you kind of have is Jason Tatum. Kemba's dealing with injuries, so he's not really at that level anymore. And Jaylen Brown could be there, but you need that one more superstar. That one more superstar. And the trade exception could maybe help with that, but I just don't see Danny pulling the trigger. He didn't pull the trigger for Jimmy Butler back then. He didn't pull the trigger for Paul George. He didn't pull the trigger for a lot of things. And some of those were maybe a good decision. They didn't pull trigger on those, but a lot of them definitely were bad decisions by him. Kevin Durant denied he's talking to Harden. I have to disagree. Or kind of agree, because I think maybe KD isn't talking to Harden, but Harden is definitely talking to his front office about getting him to Brooklyn. I think KD's kind of in a tough spot right now, because I don't think Harden and Kyrie are really going to work out together, and I think they both think that about each other. And I think KD's trying to be the guy in the middle, and maybe not handling that super well, but I think I think KD might prefer Harden to Kyrie. That might be maybe shaking up some things around there. So we'll see what happens there. Cavs had discussions about Russell Westbrook. Again, makes absolutely no sense. They already have Colin Sexton. They already have Darius Garland. Why in the world would they need Russell Westbrook on this team? Especially when the Cavs are more of a rebuilding type of team and you're not getting anywhere with Russell Westbrook. It makes no sense. So if that rumor is true or not, I don't know. But face value, that rumor is disgusting. And like exactly kind of like the Wizards rumor, the Wizards wanted Westbrook or the Hornets wanted Westbrook. It makes no sense because you're going to have to give up a lot of assets for that. And he's not going to bring much to your team. Well, he's going to bring a lot to your team, but you're in more of a – You want young players, and if you're giving up a ton of picks for Russell Westbrook, and he's going to get you wins, and it's something you don't want when you're rebuilding team. I mean, if they really want to pair Kevin Love or Westbrook and Andre Drummond together and think that that can win a championship, I don't think that's possible. Maybe get an 8 seed in the playoffs or something. Yeah, but no, you're not really getting – you're not doing anything for – Cleveland there. You're just kind of stagnant, and I hate when teams are like that. Montrezl Harrell, he went to the Lakers. Lakers did a lot of good things this offseason after coming off the championship. They signed Marc Gasol as well. Montrezl Harrell, so centers down there, very nice. Also, Serge Ibaka was signed with the Clippers to replace Montrezl Harrell. Older, but I think more of an upgrade for the Clippers. Lakers got good down there. Upgrades over Dwight Howard with Gasol and Trez. Also, the Lakers, kind of a robbery here, but the Thunder, not necessarily a robbery, because I definitely think Dennis Schroeder should be worth a little bit more than this, but I think the Thunder are content with all those picks they have anyways. Probably didn't want to add a few more, so they got the 27th overall pick. So good for the Thunder and the Lakers. Schroeder is going to be an impact player for, I think, the Lakers next season. That's a very good addition for them. And overall, I think the Lakers have done very nicely in the offseason. Still haven't gotten AD. There's rumors about the Giannis and AD taking a, I think, 2-year or 1-year contract to free up cap space next season to get Giannis, which I think is ridiculous. I wouldn't expect that to happen. I don't think Giannis would do that. I think at this point, I was more of the Giannis camp going to Miami type things, but they signed Bam to extension, so I'm not really there. And I don't really see Giannis that much interested in, at least I used to, in signing back with Milwaukee. But now there's all these type of rumors that are flying that are saying that he's going to stay in Milwaukee. So now I'm kind of leaning more towards that. But there's rumors everywhere about him going to Toronto. There's some stuff about him and Jason Tatum. Tatum trying to get him over. But I don't think that would happen as a Celtics fan. As a Celtics fan, I love that to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. But I don't think the Lakers are going to get him either. Also, today, LeBron agreed to a 2-year, $85 million extension. And this is pushing him through the 2022-23 NBA season. LeBron is going to be 36 December 30th at the end of this year. He'll be 39 by the time that contract expires. Now, I think LeBron's going to maybe start to decline. I know I've been trying to say this for a long time that LeBron's going to decline, but it's going to hit at some point, and he's definitely getting up there. And I don't think this is bad for the Lakers necessarily, because if LeBron, you know, left at, I think that would be, yeah, that would be like 37, 38 if he didn't sign that contract extension. If he leaves around there, then I think once LeBron goes, the Lakers are pretty much toast. But if LeBron can continue playing on a good level, then they'll be there, obviously. That's why I don't want AD to sign a really long-term contract with the Lakers, because I don't think they're going to be very, very well, especially if LeBron is just carrying around that cap space. But even if LeBron is carrying around that cap space for those two extended years, that will be a rebuild time anyways. So I think this is a win-win if LeBron plays very, very well for the Lakers through that whole entire contract, which I find unlikely but could happen because he is a very, very good player. If he does play very well through that time with the Lakers, then good for him. The Lakers win. If he doesn't play very well, you know, you expected it anyways. He's old, and those remaining years on those contracts anyways, you'd be bad if he left anyways, because your team's pretty much nothing without LeBron. So securing him was probably a good move for this Lakers team, and I totally support it. And the Raptors are going to begin next season in Tampa due to them not being able to play in Toronto because of Canadian rules about COVID. And this happened with the Blue Jays. They went and played in Buffalo. So now Tampa Bay has a basketball team. That's going to be very interesting. I hope they actually kind of change up the jerseys, but who knows what will happen there. And that's going to be it with the NBA. Let's move on to two little things I want to touch with the MLB. So a lot of free agency stuff hasn't really happened yet with the MLB, but the Red Sox are reportedly interested in Corey Kluber. He pitched one game, I think, for the Texas Rangers this season. He's a former Cy Young winner with the Cleveland Indians. As a Red Sox fan, I definitely would want Corey Kluber here. I mean, the rotation without Sale is bad. It's very, very bad, as we could see. But Sale's coming back, so we're going to have Chris Sale. If you sign Corey Kluber and he can come back to that type, not even Cy Young form, just a good form. Just good form. That's all we want from Corey Kluber. You'd have Chris Sale as the one. You'd have Kluber as the two. Erod, Eovaldi, and then possibly Tanner Houck, who has been playing well. And then you also have some guys that you could pull up from the minors that they were messing around with last season that don't look too bad. Also Nick Pivetta, if he can continue his development as into a better pitcher from the Phillies. So that's with the Sox. I'd totally support that move. And also the Padres, who Fernando Tatis, Manny Machado, you know, they were loading up. They trade for Mitch Moreland. A few other guys at the deadline, they were trying to make a run for it, but ultimately couldn't get through. But they're trying to load up again. The Padres want Cy Young winner Trevor Bauer, and also could have been a World Series hero, Blake Snell. who led the Rays pitching staff to that World Series. I think either one of these. And also, by the way, the Rays trying to trade Blake Snell is idiotic. It's idiotic. They've finally made up a team again that can make it far in the playoffs and to possibly win a World Series. They didn't get it, but they could possibly still contend for one, and they want to trade their best pitcher. Dumb. But if the Padres could secure either one of these guys, I think Bauer is not going to be as good as he was. Obviously, if he gets his payday. I love Trevor Bauer, though. Despite some people might think he's kind of a hothead, which at times he can't be. But I like him. I think in baseball it doesn't really matter as much. You got a few of those guys in there anyways. He's a pitcher. He's going to pitch. And even if he has a bad attitude, if he pitches well, he pitches well. And I think it's always good to have that fire on the mound. And Blake Snell, also kind of, we criticized him about his COVID comments a long time ago now, pretty much at the start of COVID and when they were the MLBPA, not the NFLPA, MLBPA was trying to work with the owners to get that started. So we criticized Blake Snell a little there, but obviously a good pitcher and a trade for him. Despite the Padres trading a lot of assets, if they could somehow get him in there, I think it could work because this is a win now mentality that they've already gotten themselves into. So, you know, you can't really revert back to the farm system if you're really going that far to win now. And if you want to win now, you need to get a good pitcher. So Snell or Bauer or both, if they could somehow pull that, would be amazing. And if they could pull both of those guys, there's no doubt in my mind that the Padres could definitely win a World Series. Or one of them. Anyways. So, guys, thank you so much for listening to Sports Report Podcast. Hopefully, we will be back next week. A few weeks back, we posted a YouTube video on our YouTube, also Sports Report Podcast, but Zach Wilson highlights possibly the Heisman winner of the season, leading BYU to a currently undefeated season. Very good, very interesting highlight video. Go check that out. And you can follow us on Instagram at Sports Report Podcast. Follow us on Twitter for some fun tweets and some updates on when episodes come out at Sports Report Po 1. Thank you guys so much for listening. We love you guys, and we'll see you later. Bye.